Off top, the ancient Babylonians of more than 4,000 years ago are believed to be the first people to make New Year's resolutions. Play the music!
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show, presented by Allstate. Happy New Year to you, Bill, and you, Charlie, and everyone else in the world. This is awesome. Another year, us together. This is great.
Best year, yeah.
New Year together.
This is the nicest Dominique is going to be all year. It's downhill from this point forward. The hater energy increases as the year goes along.
I have no hater energy. That's my resolution. And my resolution is to be a nicer person. I'm not mean. I'm nice. I'm kind. I'm thoughtful.
It's true. My resolution is to gallivant more.
Well, I hope you survive the February gallivant, because you, sir, you're a great gallivanter, but a little bit of a lightweight when it comes to having a beverage.
I am who I am.
You have a whole week in Vegas ahead of you, Charlie. Remember, Charlie, I lived on the strip for a year. I learned the hard way.
We'll see if I survive the week and if I can stick to my resolution after February 12th.
We're going to make sure you survive. I'm going to make sure you don't die.
Guys, get your hands up.
Throw them up.
We begin our football coverage today with our good hands moments presented by Allstate. You're in good hands with Lamar Jackson. You're in good hands when you have a quarterback who is as quarterbacky as Lamar Jackson. Lamar more or less locked up the MVP and went out for 5 touchdowns as the Ravens annihilated the Dolphins, blew them out. My question coming off of that game, they have an incredible defense. They have the MVP playing quarterback. They're incredibly well coached. Do you view the Ravens as a cut above everyone else in the NFL?
First of all, I'd like to appreciate how well you did that so that we can edit out all that wonderfulness before. But trust me, fans, you missed out on a good thing. Second of all, excellent virtue signaling by saying Lamar Jackson quarterbacking out of the quarterback out of all quarterbacks multiple times. I love it, Charlie. That's why you're my guy. I don't even remember what the question is, but Lamar's out of his mind. It wasn't just him. Like, there were a number of one-handed catches from defenders, from tight ends, from linebackers. This team seems like, when you look around the league, it feels like there are two teams that are good and a bunch of other guys. The 49ers, one of the teams, and the other ones are, and the other one is the Ravens. And as much as we want to give credit to how well that defense played, shutting down the Dolphins offense, I think it's appropriate that Lamar Jackson's our good hands player, because when it was time to lock down this MVP conversation, he had that game against the 49ers, and then he followed it with a 5 touchdown through the air performance, which doesn't even take to account all the other ways he impacts the defense. It was incredible to see.
This felt like not just a coronation for Lamar Jackson, but also a coronation for every big decision the Ravens have made over the past couple of years, right? Like, they go out and they trade for Roquan Smith. Roquan Smith intercepts a pass. Roquan Smith tips away or takes away a pass to set up a second interception. Middle of the field gets taken away. Dolphins way fewer yards after catching this game than they've had previously. And then for Lamar, it's not just, you know, that Lamar got better, but they replaced Greg Roman. They brought in Todd Monken. They had a more diverse passing attack than they've had in years past. The receivers, Zay Flowers has a 75-yard touchdown on the very, like, I believe the very same RPO the Dolphins ran a million times last year, which has to hurt Mike McDaniel to see his own speed concepts used against him in a big game. We saw, I say likely, the backup tight end behind Mark Andrews, who was drafted last year, make an incredible catch, have a huge game here. We saw Odell Beckham have a big catch down the sideline to set up another touchdown. We saw a team that feels fully realized, I think, in a way that no other team in the NFL does, where I feel like as we head into the postseason, even the Niners, as good as the Niners are, we look at them and we're like, Brock Purdy might melt down if things aren't perfect around him. And Christian McCaffrey's hurt now. We don't have those same questions about the Ravens right now. I don't know how you guys feel.
Well, that was masterfully done by you to frame all of it that way. You need to wear a coat all the time if this is what version of Bill that we get when you're in the coat. I will say throw Patrick Queen in there also and playing really well. There was a time when Patrick Queen was thought to be a miss, but Roquan Smith showing up allows Patrick to move to a position where he is more comfortable and more impactful in the game. This defense has been great against a lot of offenses this year. And it's crazy. It feels like the point that you're making is we often, and I'm guilty of this also sometimes, of thinking like there's the 49ers and then the Ravens are close behind. Then they beat them last week. And in watching that game, I was like, yeah, I thought the Ravens were going to win. They did win, but it didn't feel like the Ravens were just so much better than them. But you look at the way Ravens on the course of this season, and we've said this a number of times, their losses felt more fluky than anything.
Like they barely trailed all season.
Yeah. Yes. If we take out those, or don't even take them out, just factor in how they played in all of those games and understand that they I mean, you're rubbing your chin as if you knew this or you were right.
Well, I did say the Ravens were the most terrifying team in football earlier this year on the round the horn, with the only problem being that they also terrorize themselves when it comes to these games. But I mean, Dominique, this is a very insightful point you're going on. If we just take out the games the Ravens lost, are dominant.
I stopped because that's not what I meant. Not take out the games that they lost. I mean, if we don't look at their record, it's a weird thing to say for the team to have the number one overall seed in all the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think their record makes them seem worse than they actually are. If we don't look at their record and look at the way that they perform throughout the course of this season, I think we would have a better appreciation for how good this team really is and how good they can be. And then there's all the cliches about playing your best ball at the right time. They look better and better. They look better than they did against the 49ers, which you expect a letdown game to some degree. I know the Dolphins are an important opponent, but you think like, all right, this game is important to secure this home field advantage, knowing it's a big game, going on the road to San Francisco and winning, followed by another big game. You know, when you have to win lots of big games in a row in the playoffs, and these are like kind of, I don't know, like not concrete points to make, but it's fun to see this team playing well right now.
So there's something that you guys said that really stuck out to me, because you're talking about the 49ers, which I think we can still agree is a top team along with the Ravens in the NFL. The betting odds reflect that. But you were saying how everything needs to be perfect for that offense to succeed. And the interesting thing is, we're like, oh, the Ravens lost Keaton Mitchell. Maybe the running game will take a step back. No, Justice Hill will just be incredibly explosive from the line of scrimmage and all-purpose yards. Mark Andrews is out for the regular season. Are they going to take a step? Isaiah Likely is just the exact same player as Mark Andrews when you give him the amount of routes that Mark Andrews is running. It seems like they're a machine with replaceable parts, which is really interesting. And there's one part on the offense which is not replaceable, which is Lamar Jackson.
Ravens
they do have that Pro Bowl backup quarterback behind him in Tyler.
Oh, Hurley. Snoop.
Throw a touchdown in this game.
I think on Get Up last week, I talked about how great Lamar was, and I said it would be scary if he was ever like consistently like accurate, because he has stretches where he's inaccurate. Ravens fans have taken that to get mad at me online and say that I say that he's inconsistent with his accuracy. But even in the course of the game, we saw that, but it's not a problem. It's not a problem until it is. So right now, Lamar Jackson is playing great football and I'm enjoying it, and he's going to get the MVP.
Well, then there's the question. It's not a problem until it is, because you brought up the Brock Purdy of it all, which he could melt down in the playoffs. Lamar is someone who hasn't played as well in the playoffs as he has in the regular season. I think the 3 touchdowns, 7 interceptions over the course of his playoff career. Are you any questions that this team is going to perform worse in higher leverage situations?
I mean, it's the NFL. They're going to play good teams. There's a chance that they don't play as well.
Maybe. Who knows in the AFC playoffs? Yeah, they might not play good teams.
That's a fair point. I don't have any legitimate concerns, because the thing about it is it doesn't feel like anything concrete to me. You know, like it feels like more narrative than fact. And when the sample size is as small as career playoff games, like it's going to, they're going to be skewed. I can't concentrate. Bill's giving me all the faces. Tell me where I'm wrong, Bill.
I mean, it does seem like there might be some cause and effect there, right? Like you're saying, oh, they got a small sample size in the playoffs. That's kind of because they keep losing the first time they play in the playoffs.
That's
like,
fair.
But I mean, you are kind of related a bit.
I used the buzzword that I thought you would appreciate and I got a frown. That's what threw me off. I said sample size.
You already said we shouldn't consider wins and losses, which you know is right near and dear to my heart.
I know. So I appreciate to win you that. Over in the new year.
I appreciate that you're trying to make up. You didn't get me anything for Christmas, so I appreciate that for the new year. You're trying to set me up.
After last episode where I went into psychology and emotion of the game, I felt like I was going to lean in and get Bill back by talking about sample size and wins are useless stat. And instead, I get suit jacket frowny face Bill. That's not what I want. That's not what I want. I want happy Bill in 2020.
2024 is a business year, Dominique Foxworth. That's why I'm here in the suit. That's why I'm saying you got to conduct your business in the new year and like win it. In the postseason.
Well, I mean, I hope that. Sorry. I hope that we don't have a poor performance out of them because I do.
Me
like,
too.
I'm not gonna want to hear that for another year. I'm not gonna want to add any more credence to the idea that there's something wrong with Lamar or the Ravens in the playoffs because I don't think it's true.
I agree. And I don't think there's like some magic thing that's going to change with the Ravens that would lead them to suddenly struggle. I don't believe that's the case. But when I think about this team and I try to be logical and reasonable and say, okay, what could happen? What might be the concern for me? I would look towards the secondary, and not because of talent, but because of injuries. They lost Marlon Humphrey during this game. Brandon Stevens, one of their starting corners, missed the game. Kyle Hamilton, who has been incredible this year, missed the game. And I know they were playing the Dolphins, who didn't have Jalen Waddle. They still had an incredible performance still. Took away Tyreek Hill for most of the game, who got hurt early on. They made Tua look bad. Tua got injured late in this game. The Dolphins are a mess right now. But if there is a weakness, it's the secondary has some injuries. So I'm just trying to think, if we're sitting here in 2 weeks, and we're saying, man, we believed in the Ravens and we got fooled. What fooled us? That seems like the most obvious place things could go wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you, but it seemed like they showed up today and ready for a shootout. And only one team was ready for the shootout. And if they're capable of doing that going forward, then the secondary may not be an issue. But you're right. That is the weak spot of the team right now if you're picking one out. But yeah, I mean, I hope that we don't have to deal with that. I want the best teams to win. And like the imagining the – oh, and what if it's the Browns? Imagining the – oh, Lord Jesus. Oh, God.
Flacco going into Baltimore.
Charlie and I were thinking the exact same thing, just waiting to mention Joey Franchise. Oh, man, I'm so excited.
We'll get there. We'll get there. But first we have to pivot and crush. Guys – The Eagles are so mid. This team is so mid. Like, they blew a huge lead to the Cardinals. The Cardinals, the owner of 3 wins coming into this game, that's who came back and beat the Eagles. Of course, they have Kyler Murray. They're a different team. But we know what the Eagles are supposed to do when they get the big lead? Beat the out of their opponents because they're the Eagles, and they're bigger and stronger, and they can convert every fourth down. But they didn't. And we're getting close to playoff time, and I want to ask you guys, because – I am. Are you ready to write off the Eagles after seeing them lose at home to the Cardinals?
The only time I've seen Charlie have this level of joy and disdain at the same time is talking about Brandon Staley.
Yep.
And that's what this feels like to me. It's like Brandon Staley has Staley-fied the Eagles, perhaps.
Don't forget Arthur Smith, but this also got the Commanders in pole position for the second overall pick. So nice. This is a huge – this whole thing was big for me.
Charlie loves the
incredible. Incredible 48 hours for Charlie and the Commanders. But absolutely, this has been an Eagles team where even when they were 10-1, we were coming on this show every week and just sort of being like, kind of crappy, but Jalen Hurts pretty good. Push works. They always pull these games out. And now, like this was like a close game by the final score. It was not a close game when you watch that game play out. The Cardinals threw a pick six, like a 98-yard pick six on a play where a receiver ran the wrong route. They had an onside kick. The Eagles recovered for a short field. Like on a play-by-play basis, like not just like you got a couple breaks go your way. Like on a down-by-down basis, the Cardinals were comfortably the better football team in this game. And this has been happening week after week. And it was one thing when it was the Niners. It was one thing when the Bills outplayed the Eagles for the first half. The fact that this is happening with the Cardinals now, it really tells you how far this team has fallen.
They got a new defensive coordinator, and the defense got worse. I think your point is a fair one, because they were up, 21-6 at one point, I think it was, at home. And that would suggest that they are a better team that got sloppy. But your point is fair. Like, the pick six was a big part of that. Like, can I just, I'm sorry to do this if this is boring, but I just want to go through the drive log for the Cardinals.
You really are trying to appeal to my sensibilities today.
They did. They didn't.
You're just reading the play-by-play.
Log us.
They didn't stop. They did not stop them. So first drive, field goal. Second drive, 8 plays all the way down to the red zone. Miscommunication. That's the pick six. Next drive, field goal. Next drive, end of half. Next drive, touchdown. 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 They did not force a punt. And the one interception they had was on the 1 yard line, 99 yards for a touchdown. And it was a miscommunication. It wasn't even like it was some incredible defensive play. Kyler threw it to the wrong spot, or the receiver ran the wrong route. That's your defense? I get it. They don't have all the personnel. They're getting older. But against the Cardinals, I get it. Kyler Murray's back. He's better than you thought. But it's the Cardinals. You can't get a stop against Gannon and at home? At home, Charlie. Billiam, home.
The thing is, it wasn't even Kyler. The Cardinals ran for 221 yards. James Conner obliterated them.
With a one-handed catch in the end zone. Oh, did you see that Michael Carter juke? He retired somebody.
What noise did you make when you saw that?
Yeah, it was erotic, the noise I made.
You know those videos where it'll be like a dad like playing basketball with his baby, and like he'll cross the baby and the baby will fall down. That's what that felt like, but it was a real adult on the other side of the field.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that one is gonna make its rounds on the internet, I think, for years to come, because it was so out in open space and just ridiculous. Yeah, I made a noise. It's very
how
gross
do you
noise that I can't make again.
Dominique, I recognize that did not happen to you during your career. But hey.
There was one time we went to, it was my first or second year, I think. We went to San Diego, and I was playing nickel. And fortunately for me, it was in a hole, which made it more impressive, but less obvious.
Visible.
I don't think anybody saw it, but I went to go meet LaDainian Tomlinson in a hole. And I'm coming. I'm a smaller guy, so all my tackles, I am coming very aggressively. I'm not expecting people to juke. They're going to try to run me over. So let's go. Let's do this. This man gave me the nastiest in-and-out move I had ever experienced. It was so damn quick. It was the quickest I ever experienced in my life. And I didn't even touch him. It was in a hole. I don't think it was impossible. I think the hole was big enough for two people. It was two people wide, and he broke me down to my knee, and I didn't even touch him. And you producers, don't you dare go try to find this play.
Get that all 22 set up. Yeah. How do you handle that heading into the room on Monday?
It's there are two rooms. So, that Cardinal room is going to be so excited. It's going to be so much fun. The Eagles would have been much better had they won, because then you just come in and you have fun roasting them. But you're still going to get some laughs in. But while you're in the room, it has to be somber. And the coach is going to click past it. They're going to click past it quick. Because there's no coaching point.
Burn the tape.
Yeah. They're going to click past that one. At least that one. We don't need to watch that. We know what happened. But yeah, you are getting roasted. Somebody might print out a picture and put it in your locker. Oh no,
you got JPEGs are coming out of this. That's abysmal.
you gotta make it last.
This is again not a 1 week thing for the Eagles. This was one bad game. We could sit here and say, okay, well, you know, they're not peaking at the right time, like Dominique said earlier. You know, they're not going to get the one seed.
They ain't never peaked.
They might not even be they peaked a year ago during the playoffs. Is there any reason to believe they can turn things on once we get to the postseason. Any reason to think there's something they're holding back or something that they can do that they're not doing right now?
The best argument for them and a lot of other like slightly above average teams is that there are a lot of slightly above average teams. So I think their familiarity with the Cowboys, and that's like there's not a team in the NFC that they're not capable of beating, but then they got to play the 49ers. And that's what it comes down to. They got to play.
All they got to do is just break Brock Purdy's elbow again and get away with like a 40-yard catch, a sonic catch that the Niners don't challenge, force Josh Johnson to play football. As long as the Eagles can do that, they're in great shape.
CMC got an ankle today. Yeah, he left the game.
Calf.
Well, that could mean anything. They said it was a calf, but they were tight. They were retaping his ankle. So I saw the report say calf, but anyway, it doesn't matter. He had an issue today, which is concerning. Kittle got up slow a couple times. I don't know. This is the problem with this 49ers roster is their offense is designed around unique players like Debo and Kittle and Christian McCaffrey, and it's real hard to run that again when them guys ain't healthy.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of those other slightly above average teams in the NFC. We're going to travel back to Saturday night. The Cowboys, they beat the Lions on a really iffy call. I'll just say it was a bad call. It seemed horrendous. Iffy. Yeah. I mean, it was an illegal touching of the football after Taylor Decker informed the referee that he was going to be eligible. The referee thought that a different offensive lineman, Dan Skipper, had reported as eligible and called off the two-point conversion, which would have given them a one-point lead with less than 30 seconds to play. With that said, it seems like the Lions have righted the ship. The defense was a lot better. They played well against a good team. Coming out of that game, which team do you feel better about, the Cowboys or the Lions?
I feel better about the Cowboys and players and better about the Lions coaching staff.
I agree.
It was very unusual to see. It felt like the emotional the motivation for the offense at the end of the game should have been that of the defense, and the defense should have been that of the offense. So why are we throwing the ball? Let's keep the clock running at the end of the game. Let's be conservative. And on defense, let's continue to be aggressive because it is destroying Jared Goff. So why are we being passive on defense? It was just a weird, like, I don't know, Freaky Friday mind shift at the end of the game. But I do think that what we saw from the Lions was impressive, but it was all based on Aiden Hutchinson getting pressure. And if Aiden Hutchinson is enough to be a one-man pass rush, then they have a team that should be respected. He hasn't been enough all season, so I don't suspect that he's going to be enough for the playoffs. So the Cowboys do have that, and they have an offense that can be effective. Dak was still on point all game when Aiden Hutchinson wasn't sitting in his lap. So I feel better about them.
Mostly agree with what Dominique has to say here. I will say, I don't believe that this is going to change for the Cowboys. Like, the inability to manage a late game situation, not like this is some new problem that Mike McCarthy suddenly has developed here. It's a different way they almost blew this game. Like you'd almost expect Mike McCarthy to be too conservative as opposed to being too aggressive in this moment. But like, you could see the energy emanating coming off the Cowboys after all that happened late in that game, and they're coming off the sideline to celebrate. It felt like they had stolen something, right? Like, I think everybody in that building, everyone on that sideline was like, oh no, here we go again. Same old. And then they got a reprieve and they felt great about it. But I can't believe they're actually going to take away from that game. Oh yeah, we're good. If we get in the close game late against a good team, we're going to be fine. We're going to figure it out. I feel like they're going to be even more terrified because they know they did not deserve to win that game.
It's back-to-back weeks of game-winning drives that they gave up. It's back-to-back weeks of their defense getting in that situation and not being able to stop anyone. And I think that I understand Dan Quinn's logic. It's like, what we have is a pass rush. And at some point, one of these guys is going to get free. Micah Parsons had a tough matchup, fine, but Lawrence was balling all game. Mm-hmm. Where was he? Like, I think that's what he was expecting, but it was unusual to see them playing that well when it felt like Gilmore could cover anybody. It didn't seem like there were many open windows through the course of that game. And to get in a situation where you don't want to give it a big play, I get it, but you're better. Be better in that situation. Jared Goff, you forced two turnovers from, like, yeah, go ahead, be aggressive, play hard, play right. Like you want to win, not like you're scared to lose.
Right. Again, you know Jared Goff. Like, this is not some secret about what Jared Goff is, because he's very good when you don't pressure him, and yeah. He is like an M&M shell without the candy when you don't pressure him or when you get pressure on him. So melty. Like, it's very clear, all melty. Like, yeah. You know what to do to beat the Lions and beat Jared Goff. Now, what I admire about this game from Dan Campbell is that after they ran that trick play, should have got the lead, did not get it because of a terrible call. He was just like, screw it. I don't care what the situation is. I don't care how far away we are. We are going. I don't care how many play calls we've had. We're on our fourth gotta have it 2-point play to win the game from the 7-yard. Like, I don't care. We're still going for it. I respect that from Dan Campbell. That's how I would coach, or how I would call plays in a Madden game. I respect that Dan Campbell was on tilt and just said, we got to go for it no matter what.
That's exactly what my son said while he was watching. He's like, that's yes. How I play Madden. He's like, they went, he said they went back set to the 7 and still went for it. I was like, yeah. And that's like, Dan Campbell seems consistently to, it's a mistake that he always lines up with the analytics, because all his decisions line up with the analytics, but I get the feeling that that's not why he's picking it.
No,
he is
no
not question. Listening to his ear. He is saying, man, go for it, and man downs.
This is great, because I now just got the full viewing experience of how you watched that game, because you told the Cowboys to just be better. You went full parenting. Like, Dan Quinn, you're reminding my – or Dan Campbell, you're reminding my son, Dan Quinn, just be better. Get it together. Control yourself.
Yeah, let's have a little responsibility, man. Make some good decisions. Nope. Go for it again.
Dan Campbell is fueled exclusively by Panera Lemonade. Like, there is no coming back. There's no like, oh, I should reconsider my situation. Dan Campbell's never thought that in his entire life.
It's funny, because as I like watch my kids grow up, I like learn, or I've noticed that a lot of what little boys are is the same thing as like adult men, but we learn to like control the impulses that we have. But when you're young, you don't control them, because like the thoughts don't go away. Dan Campbell has not learned it. He has not learned it. He's like, no. Oh, should I climb up on this high building and jump off? Why not? Sounds like a good idea. I saw a backflip on TV. Let me try.
Everyone learns that the hard way. Not everyone can do a backflip.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, let's. I'm really excited to pivot to this next topic. Me and Bill have been waiting since Thursday to talk about this. This is our man's Joe Flacco, former Raven legend, now Cleveland legend. He's awesome. The Browns defense is awesome. You continue to doubt it, Dominique, but I have to ask.
What? Hold on. Okay, go ahead.
That he could black out and like win a bunch of games in a row.
Who's doubted that? I haven't doubted you. That. Which show are you listening to? Which show
literally,
are you listening to?
The show we're on last week where me and Charlie were like, he is playing well enough for them to win. And you were like, no, he's not as good as the other top quarterbacks.
It's not entertaining to argue to be gaslit. So I will let you guys go on with this lie. But say that.
Well, then throw it out. Doesn't matter. I want to ask now because we have more evidence. They played this game without Amari Cooper, who Flacco funneled for 265 yards the week before. And now he's just turned David Njoku into someone who seems like a top-of-the-league tight end. The offense is objectively much better with Joe Flacco than it ever was with Deshaun Watson, which will be a very sticky situation going into the offseason. What are you going
to
do with this guy?
I can't wait to talk about that.
But before we get that, I do think that there's a real question of, do you see this Flacco team as a real threat to win the Super Bowl? Seriously. Yeah.
Yes, I do see them as a real threat. The tough thing is and I think this may be the confusing point that I made, is I would not consider them the favorites because it's more likely that the Joe Flacco thing is going to blow up one week. He's never been like consistently. That's why the Joe Flacco elite question that ever existed is because you can watch a game, Joe Flacco, I'm like, damn, that's elite. And then you watch him a couple weeks later and you're like, oh yeah, all those ones that he hit people with, they caught him this time, or he's actually turning it over. Like, that's the point. Is it possible? Yes, of course it's possible. He did it before. Of course it's possible. Is it likely? No. What's likely?
Like A little bit. defense.
It is not likely that he. I mean, the defense is really great, which helps. But I think it's going to be fun and incredibly stressful when they end up going into Baltimore for the AFC Championship game. That's a distinct possibility. And that defense is ferocious, and Myles Garrett is going to win the defensive MVP. It's all been fun. Anyway, I'll let you go, Bill, before I get to this offseason, because I actually think that's more interesting to me.
Well, I'll deliver more uninteresting content before Dominique can get to the interesting part of the conversation. Dominique, it's never been the question of whether this is likely. Of course it's not likely, because it's not likely for anybody. There's no clear favorite outside of the Ravens in the AFC. No. But the point we made last week that you were very skeptical of, and that I feel stronger about now, is like the idea that Joe Flacco's not on the level of many of the other quarterbacks in this year's class. And the point that Charlie made, which I agree with wholeheartedly, is like, yes, Joe Flacco is going to have games where he looks terrible, moments where he throws the ball and you don't know why he was throwing that ball or who was open or why he threw it into triple coverage. But as the week went on last week, after we talked, we saw game after game where we saw other quarterbacks in the AFC, in the NFC, doing the exact same thing. Josh Allen fits that definition. Patrick Mahomes fits that definition. You go elsewhere around the league, Brock Purdy even fits that definition. Dak had some ugly throws in that game. Jared Goff, we know, can turn the ball over and throw some inexplicable passes. Like, in a year where there's not many great quarterbacks, the bar for Joe Flacco to be in the discussion for credible, legitimate, just as solid as the other quarterbacks in the playoff picture, it's lower than it's been in years past. And Joe Flacco is playing well enough to me that I don't think the Browns are at a significant disadvantage relative to a lot of teams in this postseason picture because of what they have at quarterback.
Yeah, if I suggested that I did not agree with that, I was wrong. I do agree with that. The problem there is he's 38 years old and just got back from being at home. If there is someone of all these quarterbacks that you name that is more likely to lay an egg, it would be the guy who was out of the league and was really terrible with the Jets last week or last year before last, I guess. That's all. My only point is, if I am picking a quarterback of this group, Joe Flacco, I'm going to go Mahomes over Flacco. I'm going to go Lamar over Flacco. I'm going to go Dak over Flacco. And I think that's not unreasonable, which is fine.
Outside of Mahomes, none of them have performed better than Joe Flacco in the postseason. Not even close.
Right.
And none of them have performed better than Joe Montana in the playoffs either. But
I would take Joe Montana over Dak Prescott in his prime. What are we talking about?
No, in his prime, yes. But the point is, Joe Flacco is not in his prime. He's not in his prime. Okay. This is a ridiculous conversation.
Joe Flacco's aging curve is very slow. Like, it's not like there are certain guys like Cam. Like, Cam was like a rocket, like straight up, straight down. Joe Flacco, it's like a real gentle slope. Like, you could bike. You'd want a bike on it. You wouldn't want to roller skate over it.
All right. Well, the point that I mentioned after we got through all that boring stuff was the whole team is going to want Joe Flacco to be their quarterback.
Yes.
And that is a tough position to be in, because the whole organization, like the management, is going to want Deshaun Watson, the guy they committed that money to. They've put themselves, and Andrew Berry, I think, is doing the right thing by trying to win with the team that they have now and getting the best quarterback in there. Very different than what the Jets have been doing over this process, where they seemingly are have an eye towards not pissing off their quarterback. But this is why they do those things, is because next year it's going to be, or that next offseason, they can't just send Joe home. Or even if you do send him home, his ghost is going to be there haunting everyone, wondering when you're going to bring him back. So it's going to be funny watching Amari Cooper try to pretend like he's happy that Deshaun Watson's the starting quarterback after he broke the franchise record, and David Njoku pretending like he's happy Deshaun Watson is back after he seemed like the best tight end in football once he got a quarterback that would throw him the ball. Yeah, there's no answer to it, but it's going to be messy.
So it sounds like what you're saying, Dominique, is the Browns need to either deliberately injure or make Joe Flacco some kind of incredible offer where, like, he's going to be on vacation next year. Like send him on to a Caribbean island for a 10-year vacation or something crazy. Like, this man, nope. Joe Flacco's got like $200 million. He doesn't need the money. Like, you can't.
They
you
got
can't
what they, what they need to off. Do. What they need to do is win the Super Bowl. And then who cares what happens next year? Then you bring Joe Flacco back, obviously, because he won the Super Bowl, and then you deal with it. That's what they need to do.
So if Joe Flacco plays well enough where you feel like you have to bring him back next year?
Well enough that you have to bring him back next year.
I agree. But if he doesn't have like a 4-interception game in the postseason, if we go to the offseason and it's like, Joe's got to be our guy, like, what do you do? Do you go to the league and you're just like, hey, if any of you guys are willing to take Deshaun's contract for a 7th-round pick, we'll do it? Like, are you just abandoning the Deshaun Watson situation altogether for a 38, 39-year-old quarterback?
That's a really tough question when you put it that way. Yeah. I mean, not abandoning it, I guess.
Abandoning it, though.
Wouldn't you want to abandon it?
Well, you wouldn't. Best case scenario. No, I was going to say best case scenario is you have them both on the roster. That's a terrible scenario. And getting one off the roster is also a terrible scenario. I don't think that anybody's going to take Deshaun Watson in that contract, given what he's done so far. And given that he still has like the stink of the sexual assault stuff.
But he had that stuff on him last time too. And they still, and the Browns gave up three first round picks and won a bidding war to get him.
People are much more willing to deal with that when they think they are getting an all pro level quarterback. Mm-hmm. They know they're not getting that. So I think it's going to be tough to move him. You'd have to move him and still pay the contract, pay a huge part of the contract, which is debilitating. So I don't know. It's a situation, which is why I said, you got to win it this year.
You also got to win it this year, because this is our only chance as a collective to root for the Browns. Like, next year, when Deshaun's back, We're out. Like I'm not not going to pretend to be thrilled about the Browns. Not going to be like, oh, good to see Nick Chubb back. Going to report about them professionally. Like, this is our chance to be like, oh, that Kevin Stefanski, what a great play caller. Andrew Berry, genius level coordinator. Jim Schwartz doing such a great job with that defense. All that stuff is out the window next year.
I think there's going to become a point when they're like, I might be a couple years down the road. They're getting out of that contract early. Even if they have to pay it, they got to cut him ahead of time. Like, this is like, he's not the same
Wilson
football
style.
Okay.
Yeah, except for much worse.
Yeah. Charlie, is there any team you think right now would go for the Deshaun Watson deal?
If it was, I was going to ask you, would there be a world where the Broncos would take the risk of trading Russell Wilson straight up for Deshaun Watson?
That's just like nuclear waste being transferred from one country to another. Maybe we'll do a better job of storing it than you were.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's really depressing. That's a real depressing GM to GM conversation.
Maybe the post-Rodgers Jets? Like, is there anybody who would do it?
Well, you've been in a fantasy football league like that, where you draft someone in the second round and you're like, I don't know if this guy's good. Can I trade you Miles Gaskin for your backup running back? Is that possible also?
Oh, gosh.
So I do want to talk about the number one pick and that the Bears locked that up because of the Panthers' incompetence. But before we get there, I got to ask you, did you see David Tepper throw his drink at a Jaguars fan? Did you see that? Did you hear about that? What do you think about that?
I did. I love that he did it and then did like a little cup flip after, like he had just hit a shot in beer pong. Like, he was thrilled about throwing the drink at this guy. And like, I think David Tepper's not stupid. I don't think he's totally naive to the reality that someone's probably filling him. So he has to throw that cup knowing there's going to be repercussions. And that's how you know you're rich, when you're like, I'll probably get fined like $100,000 for this, but I want to throw a cup at this guy. That's when you know you have actual wealth in your pocket.
It's so, like, my roller coaster of emotions in watching that was, I was infuriated immediately. And then I was like, but I'm sure that fan was being a complete. I don't want to defend anybody in this. Obviously no one should ever get a drink thrown on them unless they're on a reality show where that is like par for the course, where drink throwing is like a legitimate form of communication. It's awful. It's disappointing. But I think obviously when you are the face of an organization, the head of an organization this big and this important to, I don't know, the identity of your city, then you should not conduct yourself in such a miserable way. It's just like disappointing. I wish that we could have more fun with it, but it just ends up making me sad and looking at him thinking that he can do whatever he wants to anybody.
I mean, look, we can make fun of it. We can make fun of it. This guy traded two first round picks and DJ Moore for Bryce Young. They're 2-14. He's throwing drinks on people.
It's just like ego, though. Like, that's what it just feels like, ego and arrogance, and it makes me mad. But yeah, laugh at it too.
But I mean, like this entire run has been ego and arrogance. Like, this is totally par for the course. I don't like if it wasn't Daniel Snyder, who is no longer an owner in the NFL. Like, is there any owner who you feel worse about right now or around the NFL where you feel like he's actively sinking his team's chances more?
Not one.
And that's the one thing that he can't buy. Like, he cannot buy a successful quarterback and a successful football team, no matter how much he's trying right now. And in fact, the more money and the more resources he's pouring in, the worse the team is getting and the better he's doing for other teams around the NFL.
Also, when you see a big mad billionaire, it's just funny.
No question.
He's just like acting like a giant toddler.
Because just, like, this is someone who has no actual problems on a day-to-day basis. There is no one is mean to him. Nobody gets in his way. He's insulated from every little minute problem of day-to-day life. And so to see him upset enough that he throws a drink is extremely funny to me.
Hey, you deserve your whoop when you do stuff like that. I think that's what offends me more than anything, is you're doing things that require you to then get in a fight without actually subjecting yourself to the possibility of getting in a fight. you got a problem, enough of a problem with that guy. Like, if he's like accosting you and saying disrespectful things, then I'm sure you can get him thrown out or moved or something, like things that are completely inappropriate. If he's just throwing normal trash talk, that's fine. You can't control yourself enough. Climb down there and throw the drink in his face. Don't toss a cup and then run back and hide. Like, you want to be Mr. Angry Tough Guy? Then let's be Mr. Angry Tough Guy. Go get your whoop like the rest of us would if we walked around disrespecting people. That's all.
Okay. You want him to be Ted Leonsis and choke him?
Yeah. You never shout out to Teddy Leonsis. Get busy. If you got a problem with him, put your hands on him then. Like tossing a drink from above him where you can't, where nothing, and then doing a sachet away? Get out of here with that foolishness. Get your down there and get your hands dirty then. I feel like I'm alone in this, but I think this is a completely reasonable point. No,
it would have been even funnier to see him get his whooped by Jaguars fans.
Because you know Jaguars fans were itching for a fight. That is like the dream. If you could fight an NFL owner.
Meet me at the Duval Waffle House.
Meet me at the Duval Waffle House. I'm gonna dunk you in the pool. Like, that is not out of the realm of possibility.
No. That's attempted murder. Dunking somebody in that pool. It's attempted murder by infection.
Dominique, is there an NFL owner you would like to see in a actual rumble with a randomly chosen fan from an NFL stadium on a Sunday?
David Tepper. We're just, open and shut case. Get in there. Mix it up, DT. He the one who had like nuts on his desk because he's so tough. I'm such a manly man. Testosterone. I'm so manly. I got nuts on my desk. Fight then.
So, I agree that's the answer. But can we talk about what his incompetence has provided?
The bounty. The harvest for the Chicago Bears. I love this because, like, Ryan Poles has kind of made a bunch of really bad moves during his time as Bears GM. But this is such a good move that it's like, oh, you don't got to worry about Chase Claypool no more. Like, we're fine. Like, we drafted a 25-year-old kick returner in the third round. It doesn't matter. We got DJ Moore, baby. I love that because, like, I can appreciate that in my day-to-day life. Like, I screw up all the time, but I'm married to a wonderful woman. I got that right. Doesn't matter. All that stuff is taken care of. I feel like the repercussions of all the mistakes you make can be erased if you just get the big thing right. And I feel like Ryan Poles did that, and I can relate to that. Well,
he's going to have another question on that, though, because Ryan Poles now has the first overall pick. He has a quarterback in Justin Fields, who has one more year on his rookie deal, but has seemingly turned it around pretty rapidly this season, is playing the best football of his career. He's got DJ Moore. What should the Bears do? Do they draft Caleb Williams or Drake May at the top of the draft? Both guys seem maybe not like Andrew Luck sure things, but very, very, very high level quarterback prospects. Or they could move down a couple picks, probably get another first rounder, more draft capital. Draft an Olu Fashanu or Marvin Harrison Jr., who are sure things at their position at wide receiver and tackle. What do you think they should do with Justin Fields? What do you think they should do with the assets they've accrued?
Let's sit here and stare at each other. I'm really interested in what Bill's decision would be. I think so. The fans were chanting to keep Fields at the game, but who cares what they think? They are caught up in the moment. Doesn't matter.
Is he trying to get into fistfights with owners? So we don't got to worry about them.
Exactly. And hopefully they succeed one of these days. So I guess to weigh the decision, you have a quarterback now that if you're sure about, I guess that's what it comes down to. If you are sure that you have a quarterback, you keep them and you pay them. They're hard to find. Even if you're not sure how high his ceiling is, if you are sure that he is a franchise elevator, like your team gets slightly better because he's a quarterback, because honestly, most teams don't have that. They're looking for it. They have quarterbacks that are making their teams worse. And if you have one, you keep them and you pay them. The tough thing, and I, under most circumstances, entering most drafts, I would say that is the decision to make, especially when you have two high first round picks. You trade this one and you get more stuff because chances are you're going to miss. So the logic behind that is you get more shots. You're going to hit some more. And you can build a great team, even if the quarterback that you have now is just like starter level, assuming that's the case. The problem is having this conversation when there's a player or two players in the draft that are being talked about in a way that no other quarterbacks have been talked about in recent history. And so while we are in regular season football mode, I spend most of my time watching NFL football. So I have not had the time or ability to go like really break down the Caleb Williams tape, but I do know that we don't miss on these that often. Like, it's very rare that the whole NFL world gets around someone and names him as a guy like Trevor Lawrence and like,
Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, yeah, John Luck, Elway. Manning.
Like, those are the guys that his grade is putting him in the conversation with. These are the good decisions that no one really wants to make, because if he goes somewhere else and is immediately CJ Stroud or immediately one of the best quarterbacks in football, there is nothing that you could do to make up for that. If you draft him and Justin Fields goes somewhere else and it's just all right and your guy stinks, you lost your job and you're never getting another one as a general manager. So it's an impossible decision to make, because there's not even a safe choice, I don't feel like, given this situation.
This is a good problem to have. Like, the Bears, for the majority of their existence, at least as long as I've been alive, have had no quarterbacks. Now, they might be picking between two good ones. Like, they might have the option of a really exciting prospect, maybe the best prospect they've ever drafted at quarterback, or a guy in Justin Fields who looks like, I mean, they're playing the Falcons, who, oh my God, the Falcons need to get Justin Fields if Justin Fields is available. Like, Justin coach. Fields looked like a ma- well, that's another question. Justin Fields was like a magician during this game. And like, the numbers, you look at them, they're not impressive. They're not like blow away, surefire numbers. I think we can make some excuses for those numbers, but this is not like 3 years ago where Kevin White was their top receiver or whatever, or was, you know, broken down Alshon Jeffrey. Like, they have a legit number one in DJ Moore. They have Cole Kmet, who's a good tight end. They have more invested along their offensive line, and they need, really need a left tackle. So,
yeah, they have more invested in offensive line. It's different than saying they have a true number one and a good tight end. They have invested in this group. Does not mean they're good. Their defense is playing better, which helps.
You could see how I was, you know, that's marketing. You get the good stuff out first, and then you're like, also these guys, you throw that in there as well. You know, they have work to do, no question. And Justin Fields can still get better. He's still a young quarterback, but you have to make your decision pretty much now. Like, you can maybe wait 2 years, but you're picking up his fifth year option, which is going to be about $25 million, which is going to be fully guaranteed. Like, you're making a big investment right now, and you're foregoing the best chance you're going to have at that young, cost controlled quarterback that Fields is about to no longer be. So to me, it comes down to how you view those guys. If you think Williams or May are for sure franchise quarterbacks, and you think they are significantly better and have a significantly higher ceiling than what Justin Fields just showed, you have to make this trade. You trade Justin Fields, you get a first-round pick for him, you take a guy at one, you have all that money to work with. But if you like, if you don't think those guys are those guys, you trade the pick, you move down to 3 or 4, you take whatever team is stupid enough to win games at the end of the season and not get one of those top two picks and not tank the way the Commanders have. You get 3 first-round picks from them. You still get your left tackle. You still get your star wide receiver, and you move on with Justin Fields.
Charlie, this is why I agree with
you. I think you have to make a trade. You have to trade Justin Fields.
Yeah.
And I think he's very good. I think he's worth a first-round pick, and I am very interested to see what he does as next stop. But here's the thing, too. When you made the trade last year, it worked, but you didn't have CJ Stroud as your quarterback this season. And let's just say Drake May or Caleb Williams or both also hits. And then you've passed on all 3 of them. Right. 3 guys who could be 3 of the best quarterbacks in the NFL for the next 15 years. And you had a bite at the apple to take any of the 3 of them. And passing on that for someone who you don't believe the ceiling is as high, you have to do it. Especially with the amount of draft capital you're going to accrue from Fields and the amount that you accrued from the last trade. I mean, it's a bummer. You see guys who don't get through the rookie contract because they're bad by the end of it, because they're massive disappointments. And that's not the case with Justin Fields. And you know what? I'll say this. He'll probably end up in a happier, better situation, so everyone will win.
Yeah. You sure hope so. I think I would make the decision to draft the new guy. The question is, has the general manager and the coach done enough to save their jobs? Because I feel like midway through the season, we're expecting that whole building to be cleaned out. But the way that they're playing late in the season, the defense has come around. That's another interesting problem, because you're now in a situation where you might be stuck with a coach that you don't think is a guy, and then you're back with this – like you're firing the coach and bringing in another coach, which you did with Justin Fields, and that didn't work. So I don't know. They are in a good situation that feels really scary. But I think the move I would make is Justin Fields has shown that he can be a dynamic, explosive, impressive player, but he has not, to my liking, shown that he is worth passing up on what could be, what is being talked about as like a real legit generational quarterback.
Worth noting, Rappaport has reported that they're expecting Eberflus to return.
Flus, welcome back, Flus.
Things can change. That's all I'm going to say. That's what he's not going to. But again, if someone, maybe a Ben Johnson, leaks to you, hey, you're going to draft Caleb Williams or Drake May, you might get me next year, and I'm the hottest coaching prospect out there, and I had 18 two-point conversion plays to run for all the Dan Campbell plays at the end of that game. Maybe you want me to build your offense around a new quarterback.
That's interesting.
I remember hearing, who was it on Tennessee? Mike Mularkey. Was it Mike Mularkey who he won a playoff game and beat the Chiefs, that Alex Smith's final game. And they were like, oh yeah, we're bringing Mike back. He's great. The next week they lost, they fired him. Like, owners do not think rationally.
That's an interesting thing that you brought up there that I hadn't really considered, is how valuable, when you have a player like that, how valuable that piece is as far as attracting the next spot. Is every coach coach candidate has to look at the job that they're going to take. And I assume that the Bears immediately become the number one most attractive destination if they get Caleb Williams. I don't think that's the case if they stick with Justin Fields.
Right. And the only team, by the way. Yeah, the only team that has the ability to ensure they're going to get the quarterback they want are the Chicago Bears. If the team picking at two cannot be sure they're going to get Mayer Williams. They can't go to a coach and say, if you want this one guy, we are absolutely sure we're going to land him. And that is a big difference maker.
And just to put a bow on that, we saw that this year. I mean, we saw C.J. Stroud go into a system with Bobby Slowick that accentuated the gifts that he had. So really, coordinators matter. Hot take.
Put it on the Dominique Foxworth Show list. X's and O's beat Jimmy's and Joe's anytime.
Well, when you combine X's and O's and Jimmy's and Joe's, you get the San Francisco 49ers, who I watched in person. And my minor celebrity paid off, Charlie, so take that.
Ooh, did they announce that the Foxworth family was at the game again? Or?
No. It was down on the sideline, and Debo spotted me and came over and introduced himself and got a picture with my son, and I was cool for like 30 seconds. And then after that, I was still lame ass dad.
Did he say, keep telling him what's up, young blood?
No, he didn't. He's not old enough yet.
Stolen valor, old man Samuel.
Oh man. I love football.
Football rules.
It's the best. It's that's what it boils down to. 2024, I'm going to say it, the year of football.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, this has been the Dominique Foxworth Show presented by Allstate. Thank you, Bill, for joining us. Throw your hands up. Thank you, Charlie, for joining us also. Also, thank you to all.
Wow.
What happened? What did I do?
Bill, really nice to me. You know, Bill, you're the best. Also, Charlie, producers, just took a shot at Charlie in advance of what's going to be a very testing and trying month for him, gallivanting around the U.S.
I know how to motivate my Charlie. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. You can't heap the praise on him right now. Just neg him a little bit. He's going to ball out in the playoffs, I guarantee you. All right, Charlie, thanks for, whatever. And thanks to all the great producers. Cortez off the top, because I always forget you. Megan, Serafina, Brian, Kevin, and we're out.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.